ॐ पर्थाय प्रतिबोधिताम् प्रकटता नारायणेन स्वयम् व्यासेन कथिताम् पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीम् भगवतीम् अष्टादशाध्यायिनीम् अम्ब त्वामनुसन्ततानि भगवद्गीते भवद्वैषिणी। I'll start from verse 5. We'll chant verse 5 and 6. Antakale cha mam eva, Antakale cha mam eva, Smaran muktva kalevaram, Smaran muktva kalevaram, Yaprayati samadbhavam, Yaprayati samadbhavam, Yati nasyatra samshayaha, Yati nasyatra samshayaha, Yam yam vati smaran bhavam, Yam yam vati smaran bhavam, Jajat jante kalevaram, Jajat jante kalevaram, Tantamai veti kaunteya, Tantame vaiti kaunteya, Sadatad bhava bhavitaha, Sadatad bhava bhavitaha. We did the five just last time?
So just I think
we
did two.
No,
oh, no, no, no.
They're similar, yeah. But the two, in a sense, go together. So, yam yam va api smaran, for number six. Yam yam va api smaran bhavam tyajati ante kalevaram tam tam eva eti kaunteya sada tad bhava bhavitaha. Verse number 5 is talking about a jivan mukta. Okay. When we went over this last, but let me just go through it briefly. Both of these have to do with the time of death, and to call it, both of them. At the time of death, the one who smaran, mam eva smaran, the one who is thinking of me alone, smaran means remembering, but it means the one who is thinking of me alone. Okay. Smaran, who has knowledge of me, right? For whom I am their knowledge, the one who knows me. Mam eva smaran, present participle. Then muktva kalevaram, at the time of death, giving up the body, liberating the body, giving up the body. The one who, giving up the body, is thinking of me alone at the time of death. Saha prayati madbhavam. Or Sahat Mad Pavam Priyati, the one Yaha Priyati, that first Priyati goes to that one, the one who leaves the body, the one who leaves having given up the body, right? Having given up the body while thinking of me, the one who exits, dropping the body, the one who exits at the time of death, thinking of me alone, Samad Pavam Yati, that person goes to Mad Pavam, my being alone. Madhbhava means my being, the being that I am, Satchidananda, Swarupa Lakshana, my essence, the essence of me, who I am, which is the Satchidananda. Okay? So it goes to my being alone. Na asti atra samshaya. Here's samshaya. Here there's no doubt about this. Here, the going is in terms of knowledge because there's no distance between the Atma and Brahman. Right? So it's not a going in terms of reaching. It's a going in terms of recognition. And here there's no doubt about that because even before death, for the jnani, for the jivan mukta, that person has already recognized that my own nature is Brahman. And so the being that I am is Brahman. So there's no question of not going there at the time of death. It's not that the body is going to drop and then your mind is going to travel on as a jiva. Because you're already not a jiva. The ignorance has been removed. And so any jivatvam that is there for the jivan mukta is mithya. In other words, the mithya is in this form. This physical body, whether jnani or ajnani, enjoys consciousness. There's a sukshma sharira here. Until the prarabdha exhausts, this body has a sukshma sharira, subtle body. As long as it has a subtle body, it's going to reflect consciousness, right? And it reflects consciousness, and the table doesn't. And so there's going to be a sense of I am this, as opposed to I am that. In other words, the sukshma sharira doesn't extend like Ishvara. It doesn't take on the whole creation, right? And so that sense of I is there, reflected in the physical body. The sense of me, the Satchitananda, is reflected there in the mind also, and in the sense organs. That's the sukshma sharira. Are you? Oh, it's just that. Oh, it's the kids. They're just having a temper tantrum.
It's Katie.
What? It's bedtime.
Beyond bedtime.
Yeah. And they're cranky. That's okay. I'll be there.
So, is there a process in this remembering, or is it because it's already established understanding?
It's already established understanding. So what I'm saying is that the ahankara remains, right? For the samsara and the jiva mukta, there is an ahankara there, but one is bodhita. Bodhita means it's negated, it's ablated, it's there, but it's mithya. For the ajnani, it's there, but it's satyam. In other words, the sense of being the body is going to be there for both. The sense of being the mind, the I being pervasive, consciousness being pervasive to the mind, is there for both. But one, there's viveka. In other words, both the atma reflecting in the mind enjoying consciousness is there, recognized, and the asanga atma is recognized at the same time. In other words, right now, for instance, the asanga atma, yourself, which is Brahman, which is not doing anything, and which is not, is pervasive to all experience. That asanga atma is aparoksha. There's nothing in your mind that hasn't differentiated itself from the asanga atma. Right? So that knowledge is there. Right? At the same time, all of the vrittis are your vrittis, not somebody else's vrittis. Right? But they're mithya. And so the mithya mind with the mithya ahankara, I am thinking, I am walking to the store, I am teaching, I am listening. That mithya ahankara, that mithya kartritvam, that mithya bhoktritvam are there, but never separate from the mithya. You see what I mean? So both are there simultaneously, and both are there always differentiated. They're always differentiated. In other words, the asanga atma, which I am, is never not aparoksha, in spite of all of the activities that are going on in the mind and the body and the relationships and all of that. So if that is the situation for the jivan mukta, then on the dropping of the body, why would that change? Because the aparoksha atma is not dependent upon a vritti. Who I am is not dependent on a vritti. The recognition of who I am is dependent, in fact, on... Kids are getting into my mind.
Mm-hmm. You're surprised they're not doing them.
Well, there's two of them.
Sometimes they
kick themselves. They've had their own different routines, and sometimes they're out late at night. I think they have to water the plants and do a few things. Sorry, I don't mind. They're wonderful kids. Very cute.
Very loving parents.
Yeah. And they both have been born here. So we've watched them grow up from babyhood. Let me have a little more. Let me have a little more caffeine. That explains something about the taste of this tea.
It tastes a little different, does it?
Now I recognize it. I never would have thought of it.
Well, it's hard to... I mean, I just happened to...
What?
I just happened to pick up the box and I was reading it. And then I was going, this sounds like it's tea. And it is.
Yeah. I was so happy because it was organic. I said, you know, we have something really good here.
Sounds coming up to the grate over here.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah, they're inside the garage.
Oh, okay.
They go in the car. And,
I know there's something that goes on there at night. Or something. Okay. It doesn't last for that long, but it is pretty regular.
I've never played my car.
Really?
Never.
Yeah, that's the little boy. That's Ryan. He does that. Yeah, we were on such a subtle point.
We'll get back there. It doesn't matter.
If that recognition is there, why would that recognition go away at the time of dying?
Yeah.
But the thing is, that recognition is there in the mind. And at the time of death, there is a separation between the soul and the Sukshma Sharira. So why would that not be?
Well, first of all, for the Jiva Mukta, when the mind is mature, it means that mind already is abiding, so the vairagya is there. If the mind is still, if that nishtha is not there, then the mind's being pulled out, even now itself, it's being pulled out because of lack of vairagya, and you know, I still want this and I want that, so your knowledge hasn't matured in some of these, in all areas. But for Jiva Mukta, the mind has matured, so where does it spend its time? Even if I'm out here, my mind is out here engaged, which it's going to be as long as you have a body and mind, sense organs, you're living. Right? You're not just sitting in nearly kalpa samadhi at a time when the mind is totally, where there is no perception. Okay, but for you, the mind, this is Ishwara. The universe does not have the capacity to pull the ahankara away from yourself. It doesn't do that anymore. And so this thought is Ishwara, this thought is Ishwara, this thought is Ishwara, this thought is Ishwara. So no matter what the thought is, wherever the mind is, I still am, it's Brahman. See, the thought, if you were to, this is something Swamiji really talks about beautifully in his Bhasha on this section. If you think that in this verse they mean, and this is a problem with using the word smadhan, remembering, then you tend to think, oh my gosh, at the time of death, when all these things are happening, all these people are calling my attention, I need a doctor, and I need this and the other thing, you know, my mind can be engaged in this mithya. It can be engaged in this and that and thinking about this and thinking about that. Does that mean that when I die, if I'm not thinking about Brahman at that moment, you know, then I won't resolve into Brahman? No, not at all, because for you everything is Brahman. Every thought is Brahman, every concern is Brahman, every worry is Brahman. There's not the mithya mind, the vrittis, the creation doesn't have the capacity to make you back into an as-though-jiva. Do you see what I mean? Like,
but then I don't understand, why does Krishna put it this way? Why doesn't he put it more direct? Why does he say smaran? You know, why does he say remember me at the time of dying, as opposed to if you're a jiva mukta, nothing will happen? Why doesn't he just say that?
Because smaran has a lot of different meanings. It means thinking of me, recognizing me, knowing me. Smaran, that we know smrit just as, remember, if you look it up in the dictionary, it means a lot of other things than that. So knowing me, But even if you were to say remembering me, what does that mean? I have to unfold what that means. It means that whatever I'm engaged in, I recognize you alone. Because remember, for Jivan Mukta to have knowledge is the recognition that I am Ishvara. I am the whole. The manifest creation doesn't, the experience of the manifest creation, the nitya, subject and object, doesn't take me away from Brahman. It doesn't take me away from my knowledge. My knowledge includes the nitya, subject and object. So experience is Brahman, right? I am this. And so I would have to then have an experience that would make me feel I'm not this. But I can even have the ahankara is Brahman. The ahankara is Ishvara. The karta is Ishvara. The bhokta is Ishvara. The objects of enjoyment are Ishvara. That's that brahmarpanam, brahmahavihi, brahmagna, brahmanahutam. That's why we chant that all the time before eating. Which just tells me that the subject and the object, the karta, the bhokta, and the karma itself, all are nothing but Brahman. Right? And so say, as a Jivan Mukta, I recognize, for one who recognizes all of this as aham brahmasmi, not just as Brahman, I recognize it as my own swarupa, the Satchitananda, as the truth of all of this. Right? No vritti, no experiences away from that. For that person, there's no doubt at all that when this physical body dies, there's nothing that's going to change. But because it's assimilated knowledge. So now, look like this. For Jivan Mukta, when the physical body dies, already for the Jivan Mukta, the ahankara is mithya. What that means for the ahankara, when we say ahankara, we mean the I being identified with the body, the mind, the sense organs. That ahankara is mithya. The atma is what illumines as the self of the ahankara. The atma, which is Brahman, is myself. That is the self of the ahankara. Right? So if the self of the ahankara is not the body, the mind, the sense organs. That's why we say the ahankara is mithya. But what illumines the ahankara is myself. And so when I think of myself, I don't think of myself as the body, mind, sense organs. I think of myself as the aparoksha atma that I am. And I'm always that. In other words, my sense of self is always Brahman. The sense of self is not the body, mind, sense organs. The body, mind, sense organs enjoy the sense of self, but it's mithya. My sense of self is always aparoksha. It's always exactly the same. Now, since that is my sense of self, and it is changeless and free from time, when the physical body dies, then what happens to the sukshma sharira, right, that used to have an ahankara based on ignorance that was attached to it, right? And then that ahankara, based upon your karmas, transmigrates. But now the thing is, there is no, that ahankara is nothing but mithya. Right? And so when the physical body dies, your sense of self is not the ahankara, it's Brahman. It's yourself. Your sense of self is yourself, not the ahankara. And so there's no one attached to it. I am not attached to the ahankara as me. And so the sukshma sharira then, along with the ahankara, goes back into the elements because there's nobody enjoying it. The prarabdha has come to an end, right? The prarabdha that brought the physical body into being has come to an end. The ajnanam, which had caused the sukshma sharira to be, the jiva to be, is gone. And so what's to happen with that sukshma sharira once the karma has run out? What the Shastra says, sukshma sharira goes back into its elements just like the physical body goes back to its elements because the ajnana is gone. So while living, the ahankara is mithya. Right? It's there in a bodhita form, a negated form. When the body dies, then as opposed to the samsara, the physical body, for both the physical body and for both the jnani and the samsara, physical body dies. But for the samsara, the sukshma sharira goes on because the ajnanam is there. For the jnani, the sukshma sharira is no more. And so the karta bhokta isn't even experienced as nitya. It is simply there as Ishwara, as Brahman. That's why that's what's said in this verse. He comes to my being alone, right? He travels as though to my, that sukshma sharira, all that, travels to me alone. He goes to me alone. There's no going to anything else. And how does he travel to me? And for this, there's no doubt. Why? Because you already are that. And so it's not a matter of reaching anything. It's a matter of recognition. And so here, Shankara says in his introduction to the next verse, he has Krishna as though saying, this niyama, this rule, right, this niyama, this rule is not just for me, toward me alone. It has a larger scope than just myself. And this is to explain, he says, in fact, yam yam yati smaran bhavam, he says, in fact, whatever one is remembering, yam yam, whatever bhava one is thinking of, you know, whatever thing one is thinking about, tyajati ante kalevaram, at the end, when he abandoning the body, tyajati, he abandons ante at the end, at the time of death, the body, whatever he's thinking of, tam eva eti, that alone he goes to, who sada then sada tad bhava bhavita ekantaya, sada means always, tad bhava bhavita. So there's this one, this verse. First it just says, whatever one thinks of, whatever one is thinking about at the time of death, that's where one goes. And in fact, very interesting. Whatever one is thinking about at the time of death, that is where a person goes. So Swamiji uses, and this is what, in fact, Indians often, in India, they always often think like that. That's, you know, so that last of them, that last thought is very important. That's why they'll chant the name of the Lord into their ear as a dying person, that person, because they want to try to force the issue of making sure the person has that their final thought will be something that will really bless them and take them to a beautiful loka, a beautiful set of experiences. So it's going to be very important. But what they forget is this sada tad bhava bhavitaha, which means, Swamiji introduces this in his bhasha, saying, you know, wouldn't it be nice, say you know this, and then you think, well, everything's fine. It doesn't matter what I do in this life. I can do whatever I want. As long as I remember to think of Bhagawan at the last moment. Or let me, at the last moment, I'll just do what I want now. This is an easy thing. I'll do what I want now, and then at the last moment, I'll just concentrate on Swarga Loka. You know? Then concentrate on what it is I really want for the next life. And then it'll be cool. That'll just be the trajectory. But it's not like that. Because it's actually the last thought is the culmination of what you have been consistently directing your love and your devotion toward. That when the body is gone, when the body loses its strength and all of the energy is gone, where your mind is going to be is where your heart is. And so all of your life you've spent, say, doing karmas in a particular toward, working toward and having devotion to something. It could be money, in fact. It could be anything. But this is where you've had your heart and your devotion and where all of your actions, you know, have been geared toward accomplishing this, for attaining this. This is who you are. That's your bhava. So where your bhava, where your devotion, where your focus has always been, at the end, that's the vritti that will carry you forward. It's not really your decision. That vritti is the culmination of what you actually value. And it's kind of a neat meditation to do, because you can understand it like if you put yourself, just imagine yourself, which I've done this, just to kind of experiment with it, just mentally, you kind of imagine yourself at the end of your life. And then just see, you know, at that last moment, what really is right now. What thoughts would you be afraid of intruding? You know? Because it's so important to you. What would intrude in a way that you may not want?
What if you wanted more upadesha?
That would be fine. I would like that one. You had that one, that's because you need more upadesha and just take you to your back to...
Oh, then I'm okay.
Yeah, you're cool. You're really okay. No, but this is, I'm serious about this. You know, when you think about it, what are kind of the competing attachments or desires or motivations or drishti? Drishti means the vision. What are the competing visions? You know, that grab your that will take your heart. You know, what are they? You know, that's a beautiful thing to actually do some vichara on, some manana on. It's just there's so many interesting things you can do in meditation or as a sadhana, just to understand where your vairagya is and where there's kind of a lack of vairagya, where there's a needing or wanting things to be different. And the whole world, it gets exciting actually. The whole world is a sadhana. You know, it just presents complexities. It presents challenges to you in terms of your knowledge. You know, you can look at this like that also if you're interested in. I mean, I like to see all of these kind of things. I find them all really interesting. But what this verse is saying is that sada means always, tad bhava bhavita, that one whose mind is always going to that thing, right? Then whatever that thing is, that's where they will go. And so Swamiji's commentary goes, like, for instance, if a person's always thinking about money, if that's the most important thing to them, then that's going to be the direction of their next birth. Of course, their punya and bhava is going to come in to make that more or less achievable. But still, that will be the intent of the person. Now, since the object of desire is away from you and not you, there's no guarantee that you're going to get that object of desire. But the force of the prarabdha is going to take you in that direction. Whether in that life you get to fulfill it or not, whatever it may be, has to do with punya and papa. There's no guarantee. It depends on your karmas, whether or not you'll fulfill it or not, or what, how easy of a road it will be. But that will be the direction, because that is your desire. But punya and papa come into this because this karma ends up being away from you. In terms of the jivanmukta, recognizing yourself as Brahman, that's already occurred. There's no karma there at all. It's knowledge. There's nothing to achieve, nowhere to go, nothing to gain. It's not about punya and papa. Punya and papa have been left behind completely for jivanmukta. You are Brahman, and Brahman doesn't have any punya and papa. There's no karma there. There's no karma there. It's done. It's over. But in terms of a jiva, a samsari, going to one loka or another loka, or getting another birth that will help me to achieve this desire or that desire, if that's the direction of your heart, definitely your karmas will take you in that direction. But that doesn't mean that you'll achieve it to your satisfaction or achieve it completely. He uses the example of, there's different lokas, and some people will have some karmis, will have done a lot of karma and a lot of prayer, and will spend a tremendous amount of time in upasana and prayer to get to a particular loka, like Indra, to reach Indra loka, that's a swarga, and to get to Indra. And so they can get to that loka if all else is well, right? But with a proper karma, and that's their devotion, they'll get there, they should be able to get to Indra or to some other loka or to get into a situation, reach a situation which their heart desires, with the caveat of the punya and papa making it maybe not as much, not satisfying them as much as they would possibly like. But so anyway, so Shankara says, so this is what happens to a person at the time of death. You know, it's not just for the Jivan Mukta, it's also for the samsari. It's just that the samsari is looking for something out there, right, other than me. And so that becomes more precarious, but nevertheless, that's the direction they'll go in. But it's going to be that last thought is not something that they can decide upon at the time of death. The last thought is, in fact, the essence of who you are, right? As a jiva. It's the culmination of who you are as a jiva. And that's not something that you can fake. You can't fake what's actually important to you. It's what is actually important to you, what you actually desire, that's going to be there. Right? Not a pretend one.
And the circumstances of death, like a violent death, is going to be peaceful.
What they say is, in terms of the type of death, there's going to always be, of course, abuse of free will. But the type of death also is part of punya and papa. Like, they'll always say that, you know, to have a peaceful death, or to say die in your sleep, or to die in the care of your family, that type of thing. That's considered a great punya, you know. And then, but we all have our death is part of the prarabdha. You know, there's a last breath, and it's part of the prarabdha. You know, hopefully it won't be a painful death. But death, you know, it's our death, whatever it is. But it's definitely part of the karma. Okay. So there's these two verses. And then he says, Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu, Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu, Mama nismara yudhyacha, Mama nismara yudhyacha, Mayarpita mano bhujihi, Mayarpita mano bhujihi, Mame vaishasya samshayaha, Mame vaishasya samshayaha, Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu, Mam anismara yudhya cha, Mayi arpita mano bhujihi, Mam eva aishasi asamshiyaha. So now Krishna says, keeping all that in view, he says, Tasmat, therefore, sarveshu kaleshu, at all times, sarveshu all kala, time, sarveshu kaleshu, at all times, mam anismara, may you remember me, may you think of me, smara. Anu means according to the Shastra. Mana means after something. Swamiji says, Shankara says, after knowing. Means in light of the Shastra, in light of your knowledge, anusmara, remembering me, thinking of me. May you remember me, yudhya cha, and fight. Remember me and fight. Yudhya cha. Mayi arpita mano buddhihi. The one whose buddhi and manas are devoted to me. Arpita means they worship me, they're devoted to me. Mayi arpita mano buddhi. Mam Eva Eshasi. Being one whose mind and buddhi are devoted to me, Eshasi, you will definitely come to me. Asamsheha. Eshasi, you will come. Okay. Teacher, you will come, Mam Eva, to me alone. Asamsheha, definitely. Okay? So here, this is here the Yudhicha, that's Arjuna's karma. He's a Kshatriya, and remember he's in the middle of the Mahabharata war now. And so as a Kshatriya and as a king, you know, as a prince, his dharma is to fight, you know, and to uphold the dharma. And now he's in that situation, that's his dharma, that's his duty. So he's not talking to you that you have to fight. He's saying whatever your dharma is, may you do your dharma, may you do your duty, right? Thinking of me means according as you've learned, Krishna says here, it's really, let's see, let me read this to you. Oh, it's in the next verse. He says no, something better in the next, nicer in the next verse. But here, Anusmada Yata Shastram. So he says, just as you've been taught according to the Shastra, just as I've taught you, you've been taught by your teacher and by the Shastra. Keep remembering me. May you remember me and fight. Thinking of me, keeping your mind on me. You fight, you do your duty. What does that mean? Mai arpita mano buddhihi. Being one whose mind and buddhi are devoted to me, are focused on me, are centered on me. And here, the buddhi, in terms of your dharma, your prarabdha karma presents to you situation after situation after situation. That's the prarabdha karma. When a situation presents itself to you, included in the situation, coming along with the situation, is a sankalpa. And that sankalpa has to do with what is dharma for you in the situation. This is how Swamiji explains this really, really beautifully. The situation would be like this. A situation, like for instance, for Arjuna. A situation comes that it is my dharma to fight in this battle because of the papa that Duryodhana has done. Right? It is my duty to fight. The situation of the battle has come, and also the sankalpa that is my responsibility to fight. Okay? That's the sankalpa. That's Ishwar sankalpa. So what Swamiji is saying, and what Shankara is saying here, is that the dharma of the situation in the form of an Ishwar sankalpa, will come with the situation. It's clear, this is my duty in the situation. I need to do this. But the manas, which is your own personal sankalpa, can also come. Like in this case for Arjuna, his personal sankalpa, due to his affection to Drona and to others on the other side, you know, Bhishma and Drona and so many others of his teachers and family on the other side, his personal sankalpa is, but how can I kill my teachers and my relatives? If I kill all of them, what will I have? The whole world becomes meaningless. And so that's the personal sankalpa versus Ishwar sankalpa. And so here, this Mai Arpita Mano Buddhihi is the recognition of the Ishwar sankalpa and the Jiva sankalpa, and having laying both of them at the feet of Ishwar, so that you do the Ishwar sankalpa. you lay the jiva sankalpa at the feet of the Lord out of devotion for me. You know, there's my sankalpa, which I devote to Ishwara, and there's my personal sankalpa also, which I devote to Ishwara. In other words, the Ishwara sankalpa is the sankalpa that I follow, and I resolve the personal sankalpa. So I thought this was really kind of a profound way of thinking of self. Mighty Arpita, devoted to me, where I become the object of worship for you. You are the most important, Bhagavan is the most important thing to me. And so the sankalpa is the Ishwara sankalpa that comes along with the prarabdha. My duties are clear to me. But then I have conflicts over my duty. And so the conflicts that are brought about by the jiva sankalpa, those are also offered up to Ishwara. And then of course the Ishwara sankalpa, you know, is what I follow. So do your thinking of me, may you fight. Thinking of me, may you do your dharma, you know. Being one who's both mind and knowledge, manas and buddhi, are offered to me. The buddhi is the Ishwara sankalpa, the manas is the jiva sankalpa. Let both of them be offered to me. So being one who is in that way, he says, definitely such a person will come to me. For this there is asamshaya. For this there is no doubt. Why? Because this person, remembering me as I am, remember Arjuna has already been taught. It's not that he hasn't been taught, but his knowledge isn't clear. His vairagya isn't formed. He hasn't had any time. He's only been taught for 2 hours. I mean, Krishna hasn't been talking to him for very long. He's just been unfolding this knowledge. And so Arjuna has to have time to really assimilate all of this. He's seen it and understanding it. But he has to assimilate. How to assimilate it? How to really own all of this up? It's not that he doesn't know. But he knows, he sees, but then his whole manas, you know, his emotional self has to assimilate all of this, and his buddhi also, whatever doubts are there, have to become cleared up, you know. And so as that process will take place, you know, being like this, he says, therefore, you know, all the time, remember me. Have me be your primary, have me be what is primary for you. And if I am primary for you, right, then doing your duty with me as primary, then being one whose mind and buddhi are devoted to me, there's no doubt you will come to me. Where else are you going to go? Right? Because the knowledge is you are me. And so what is in the way are just these various, you know, various pratibandhikas, obstructions that have to be worked through. And so with this, now he goes through about three different verses on different types of meditation. We'll learn this next week. Different types of meditation and upasana and karma yoga, all of the things that are necessary to get rid of the pratibandhikas, to get rid of the obstructions that stop me from really owning my knowledge. And so from here, from this verse, he goes into talking about how to get rid of the obstructions. One are the mullas, the impurities that I bring with me that bring with me as part of the prarabdha that cause difficulties. One are the raga, dvaishas, all of the likes and dislikes. And the other, besides the jnana, there's the mullas and these impurities. And then there's also what we call the lack of steadiness of mind that you need meditation, nididhyasana, and upasana for. So there's all different sadhanas to help get rid of the duritas. Duritas mean the impurities and the things that stop my mind from being able to hold my knowledge, from being able to revel or rest in my knowledge. But if this Karma Yoga Buddhi is here, if in a way it's saying, if I'm a mumukshu, Arjuna is a mumukshu. He became a mumukshu, that's why Krishna's teaching him. The person who's a mumukshu, then the Ishwara is primary. Moksha is primary, Ishwara is primary. Self-knowledge is primary. Self-knowledge is primary, then there, he says, there's no doubt you will come to me. So, let's stop there and do the rest of it. Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamadachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurupyo Namaha Harihi Om.
This word devotion, it's not in the religious sense, but it's what what your heart craves or what your urge is. Is that?
Well, when we think of devotion, usually it's a spiritual religious word, and we think devotion to the Bhagavan.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, you can be devoted to many different things. A samsara can be devoted to anything. You can be devoted to money or to music or to your business. Where's your heart? What is your heart and your desire? Where does it naturally go? And we think of for mumukshu, the devotion really is toward knowledge. You know, it's toward moksha, toward liberation.
And also devotion sounds like you can self-direct it, but it comes out of sort of the essence of your thought life, right?
I would say like your desire, the desire directs the devotion. You know, like what is your primary desire? That's why, you know, the viveka leads to vairagya. Your primary desire is toward happiness, toward ananda, for all beings. So what is going to change the direction of the desire for ananda away from samsara, like objects in samsara, objects in duality, to liberation or to self-knowledge or to Bhagavan? Is viveka.
Yeah, yeah.
Without the viveka, I'm still
lost.
Superimposing the ananda on an object. And then you have to, where is my fullness? Where is my happiness? That is where your mind will go. Right? And so the mumukshutvam is necessary. What if I believe my ananda, my joy, my fullness, my completion is Swargaloka? And I will spend my life working for Swargaloka. What if I think it's on family, developing a family? Well, that's what I'll do. Yeah. It can be toward many, many different things. But for a mumukshu has recognized that all of those objects of ananda are dukkha yonis. They're worms of dukkha for dukkha. They carry inherently in them suffering. And you wonder, is there any place that is free of that? where I can safe, where an ananda, a fullness, a wholeness, which is free of dukkha. You know? And you recognize, the mumukshu recognizes that there's nothing within duality that's like that, by the very nature of duality.
Can both ignorance and knowledge lie within sukshma sharira, right?
Not exactly. Yes and no. When ignorance is removed, for here, when we say moksha itself, is not the attainment of knowledge, it's the removal of ignorance. The only thing, in a sense, that's like that, the reason that is true is because you're, the very nature of yourself, right, is self-evident.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't require, your own nature doesn't require a vritti to illumine it. Whereas everything in duality requires a vritti for it to be known, mm-hmm. because it's other than you, right? It's maya. It's something in the mind. It's something within duality. Mm-hmm. It's objectifiable, and so there, and not yourself. So it's not self-effulgent. So it requires a vritti. So you have to gain knowledge of it, right? And you can lose it also, right? Because it's away. It's away from you by its very nature. But yourself doesn't require a vritti for the self experience to be there. That's why we say it's aparoksha. And so now for you, it's going to be a matter not of gaining knowledge of an object, but of removing the ignorance that has caused your mind to superimpose your being upon itself and other objects. Right? Once that ignorance is gone, then the self-shining of yourself is that superimposition isn't there anymore. So yourself is free, and nothing can, you don't need your mind to illumine it. You needed the mind to get rid of the ignorance. You needed a means of knowledge to get rid of the ignorance, but not to illumine the self. Even for Ajnani, the self is self-evident. But the superimposition is the adhyasa, the superimposition is there that causes you to take that self-evident me as being one with a physical body. That's the plight of an Ajnani. When that ignorance is removed, that superimposition is there, is removed. So now the self-evident me is there, which is free by its very nature. Then that's self-evident to me. And the physical body is also here. But the confusion isn't. The vritti is here, and the self-evident me is here, but the adhyasa isn't, because the ajnana has been removed. Right? And so that's different. That's different than the attainment of knowledge in the way that we normally think of it. That's where this vritti vyapti and pala vyapti come in, that we've talked about.
But sometimes it seems like you know, you can get all swept up in things in your mind and get sort of carried away and this and that, and then you have to actually bring your mind back and kind of rest mm-hmm. with yourself. So, in a sense, mind is definitely involved, you know, in knowledge.
Definitely the mind's involved in knowledge, and it's involved in the ajnana vritti. The mind is involved in knowledge. But now say the mind habitually goes on a ride, you know.
Like it gets upset.
Yeah, and it goes on and goes off. What is going to even win out in terms of this, of the mind?
Mm-hmm.
Is your knowledge, or, you know, the self-forgetfulness, or the being carried away?
Mm-hmm.
The carried away is only going to last for so long, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then it'll always, what will always win out is your knowledge.
Well, while you're carried away, while you're upset, can you don't lose yourself. You're still self-shining there, but there appears not to be recognition of that, but still there is.
Well, we call jnana with pratibandhakas is when and why we do nididhyasana and more shravana manana nididhyasana, why we keep doing all of that, is because that clarity or that jnana nishtha isn't there. And so the mind, I as though lose myself.
Well, are you saying that if you have clarity, you don't get upset?
No, I'm saying that even if you're upset, you don't lose yourself.
Yeah, you don't.
That the aparoksha atma that you are is not covered over by any vritti ever at any time. Whereas when you gain in clarity, that differentiation isn't clear. It isn't complete. And you know what I think also is a lot of times, see, once that clarity is there, the mind can still cause you some pain.
Yeah.
You know? But you never lose yourself.
But when you're upset, the clarity doesn't seem to
be as clear.
Yeah. What am I trying to say? You can be very upset, and you don't seem to differentiate the self-shining me, although the self-shining me is very much present.
Present to who?
Huh?
Is it present to your? Is your mind? Does it? Is the differentiation there, or do you feel like you don't know?
I don't feel like I don't know, but it's very painful and very consuming.
Mm-hmm. And that's why karma yoga, that's why nididhyasana, that's why we talk about vairagya and all these things, because that the mind habitually has this need. I need things to be like this in order for me to be happy, and that's why it becomes a sadhana.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime you're in pain, mm-hmm. that's a sadhana.
Mm-hmm. But that need of that need that the mind has, and that doesn't necessarily reflect on the clarity of your knowledge. You can still have a mind like that, right?
Yeah, you can have a mind like that, and you also know that particular area you need to work on.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pratibandhika. It's causing pain for you.
Mm-hmm.
Any area where the mind is causing some pain, or you know, where you can't just kind of relax and appreciate Ishvara, and you know, Papa Karma's. For their papa karmas are there for a jiva mukta as well as for a samsari. It's not like you gain knowledge and then all of a sudden your life is great. It isn't. There are hard times. And those hard times are, you know, they have to be handled. And they're hard times and they have to be handled. But you're up for it. You're up for handling it. You know, without losing yourself in
yeah.
it, right?
Yeah.
And you don't expect the world to, everything to just be easy. Some things are challenging, but if you have a certain objectivity, then that's the task. It's an unpleasant situation. It's a hard situation. It needs to be handled. But I don't lose myself in it, you know? There's no sadhana required for that. You're objective, you're handling it. It's hard.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Then there's situations where the situation grabs you, where you become miserable and a lot of build-up and all of that because of the situation, right? Where there's a lot of emotional stuff going on because of the situation.
Mm-hmm.
Then that is a sadhana then.
Mm-hmm.
Then that's something where you have to use all of these different devices that we have, you know, working with the inner child, bringing up Ishvara, looking objectively at the situation, looking at, you know, what I really need to be happy, all different levels of vichara.
Okay.
In reference to the situation. That's the work. Because if we don't do that work, then again and again, you know, that situation is just going to grab you until you get sick of it. And when you get sick of it, you finally decide, okay, now I'm going to work on this. You know, because it's not worth it anymore. And it does come down, I think it does come down to that. It's like the monkey with your hand in the jar. You know, you've been beat down so much around this thing that you decide to to let go and let it be Ishwara. And it's a huge relief. And then as you start learning how to do that, then it's such a relief that it becomes, you become addicted to doing that more and more and more. You know, because your mind doesn't have to carry the load of this ignorance.
So would a jnani ever worry about whether or not they're going to be reborn? Or would it just not, would it be a relevant?
It's a non-issue. It's non-issue because it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. See, that's the thing. If you think of infinite beginningless lifetimes, right, up to this one, and now you have this little span of time that is basically nothing, and life is nothing, and you're worried about a little overlap or not, what difference does it make? I mean, we're just looking at an infinitesimal amount of time to care about whether there's an overlap, or who cares? It's a total non-issue, and especially if you know yourself, it's even, say you're a mumukshu, it's a non-issue, should be a non-issue, and if you're jiva mukta, of course it's a non-issue. You wouldn't see why you would be reborn, but if you are, then that's fine.
Who would you think is going to be reborn? Who is the me who would be reborn?
Yeah, who would be reborn? Who's going to be reborn, and why would that be? Maybe there's something that you don't know about. I mean, you know, some karma that hasn't been completed or something. But from your standpoint, you wouldn't see any reason to be reborn.
Yeah, because it's going to be the same Brahman, right? I mean,
Brahmins, there's no birth or death for you. You're not going to be reborn. Just, you know, from the standpoint of your being, there's no death, there's no rebirth, there's just your presence.
Yeah.
That will never change. And even if you're samsari, totally ignorant, when you die, it will be a nice surprise for you that there's no death. You will never die. You'll never experience death. It doesn't exist for anybody, ever, at any time. Brahman doesn't die. It's always exactly the same. And Brahman is yourself. So even for an ajnani, the body drops. Sukshma sharira is there. Brahman is there. Sukshma sharira doesn't die. Brahman doesn't die. So there's no experience of death. Anyway, it's just a fear that you have from this loka, you know.
But for an ajnani whose mind has not differentiated Brahman versus the mind,
right.
The mind. That sukshma sharira, even though it doesn't die, then is there, you know, does the shastra speak to, you know, is there a, still that ahankara that I thought that, oh, my body has died, I'm here, or the stuff, all the stuff that mental stuff has through this life carries on and on and on?
There's some scars there, but the one thing is the sukshma sharira, the ahankara, Brahman, all are intact. And so a lot of things are left behind when you drop this body, but it's all part of the interrelated cause-effect karma. So from your standpoint as a jiva, you're just continuing on. And it's something that you've done an infinite number of times. So every time you take a physical body, most of that is completely lost. Sometimes for children, for a few years or so, there's a memory, that type of thing.
Well, your intellect gets lost too, doesn't it? I mean, to be able to...
Your intellect doesn't get lost. The memories associated... When you take this body, there's a lot of memories that are... Your memories are lost of what came before, except for some people, which didn't close over properly. But they say that when the sukshma sharira is released from this physical plane, this physical loka, that actually there's a much longer, you have a much longer memory of lifetimes.
Oh, I can see that. Yeah.
You don't even think of it as lifetimes, exactly. It's I did this, and then 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 I did this.
Yeah.
Right? There's more of a continuity there from the standpoint of the sukshma sharira. So they say in the shastra.
Yeah.
You know, but from the sense of the me and the ahankara that has the self for its truth, right? there's not any loss. There's not even a flicker of lost being or loss of meanness. There's change in environment, but that change you've been doing from different time. Just like you can now go into a dream state and come back. And it's nothing to you, because it's natural. It's part of being a human being. So even think about it. You don't know, oh my God, I go to a dream state and come back. It's totally part of being a being.
This Nitya sense of me that belongs to the body, and there's the sense of me that is Brahman, you're going to lose that Nitya sense of reflected here in the body, right?
Not exactly. You'll lose your body, and you'll recognize, oh, I wasn't this body.
And the sense of me is still here, but it wasn't being produced.
You'll realize the sense of who I am was not dependent on this body.
Yeah.
And be, oh, wow.
That'd
be for Nadia.
Yeah. Well, because Sukshma Sharira is still there, you realize, oh, I'm not dependent on this body at all. I don't lose myself when I lose this body.
But what is that sense of I then? Does it have a personality the way it does now? You know, we associate ourselves with all this mental faculty.
You think that the different ways that you think and whatnot contribute to your sense of self, but they don't actually. Your sense of self is taking on all different types of thoughts and a maturing intellect, and you gain knowledge here and there. But that doesn't in any way give you your sense of self.
Yeah, but that is, it doesn't give you your sense of self, but that is part of the sukshma shiva, right?
Yeah, but the sense of self that makes you you is Brahman. That's what makes you you. And so all the experiences that you have are just the experiences that you're having, whether it belongs, the experiences belong to the mind, they belong to the buddhi, they belong to perceptions, they belong to the body. These are experiences that you are having. The you that feels those experiences is Brahman. That never changes at all. And so you're neither diminished or increased by the type of experiences that you have.
But when you say these are the experiences you are having, who is that you who's having Brahman. Those experiences?
Brahman. Brahman is what is the truth of them. The feeling that I am having the experiences is what is because of the ahankara. Identifying identifying with the consciousness in relationship to the experience. But the one having the experience is really, in a sense, is Brahman, in truth.
Well, so Jnani would say these experiences are happening.
Yeah, and recognizing myself as the changeless truth of them. And when you say, well, what about my personality? Really, what makes you you, the personality you're attached to, is Brahman, not anything else.
Mm-hmm. I meant more as, you know, personality as being that as part of the mental self, which is part of sukshma.
Yeah, but that doesn't make you you, though.
No, I meant that as carrying on or not.
Yeah. I don't know about, like, say you can be extrovert once in a life, perhaps an introvert in another. It's all, you know, kind of multi-dimensional, and karmas are involved in all of that.
But, you know, with the body, it's kind of interesting. Like, sometimes you talk about, you know, recognizing the satyam amidst the mitya, you know?
Yeah.
But then, like, with the body, because, like, you feel the sensations, which are stronger, in a sense. Do you know what I mean?
Well, that's why even the breath and the body, to do contemplation on that, to differentiate the Atma from the sensation. Because the sense of touch is pervasive to the body, right?
Yeah.
All of the other sense organs extend out.
Yeah.
The sense of touch doesn't. Mm-hmm. I mean, it does in a way, like if I feel this. Mm-hmm. But the sense of touch pervades through the whole body. You know, and so it lends itself to more attachment.
Yeah, so when you're like doing like some contemplation in the asana, when you're trying to recognize the satyam amidst the mitya of objects, so then or just even with your eyes open, you know, just walking around and stuff, then with the body, you know, the isness is and is knownness, to sort of dismiss the mithya, it seems like it's a little harder.
It is harder.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean it's
no.
not to do it.
Right. Yeah. But it just occurred to me, oh, it's harder to
yeah,
do that.
Yeah, it is harder to do it. Yeah. Similarly, to differentiate the Atma from the breath, because to do that, you have to realize that you're not breathing. You have to see the fact of it.
Yeah.
That's why doing japa and things like that are very helpful, because it helps to create that separation in a sense. Not spatial separation, but to recognize that differentiation. And to recognize the differentiation between the physical sensation and Atma, breath and Atma. It's easier to do it than with thoughts in the self.
Oh, but it's very easy. You can see that there's no breathing and awareness. Isn't that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Awareness, it's just aware.
But yeah, but to when you do meditation, to make that distinction, so the aparoksha Atma is very clearly me, stable, as the breath is coming in and out.
Yeah.
The physical body and the sensations of the physical body, to do the differentiation. That's, you know, that's why we do the nitya dhyana, just to again and again and again see the stability of my being, the aparoksha, the self-evident nature of me, absolutely still and unchanged amidst all the experience, including the body, physical sensation, breath, thoughts in the mind, emotions, you know, so that the pervasive, changeless pervasiveness, approach the nature of myself is just who I am. Right? That's who I am.
Well, that's a good identity too. I mean, you know, it's comforting.
It's me.
So, Carol, would you say that, or would the Shastra say that all jivas are on their way to becoming, through however many lifetimes, on their way to becoming mumukshus and then jnanis?
You can say that, but you also have to go and say like this, infinite minus one is how many? Infinite minus one.
Oh, it's infinite.
Is infinite.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, it's the culmination of the jiva. Because with that, you go on learning and learning and discriminating, assimilating your experience. This is where you'll end up. You know, as you go on assimilating your experience. Unless you say there's some jivas that refuse to assimilate experience infinitely. Who knows? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But we're human beings and we have minds. We have karma. We also learn from our mistakes. It's like maybe it takes, you know, billions of lifetimes to learn, but sooner or later, if you put your hand in fire, you finally get it. No, I'm not going to do that anymore because it hurts so much.
Right. And that's why it's so interesting to disentangle now what is the buddhi you've been born with, what control do you have over that, you know?
Your prior
buddhi you've been born with and some intellect you've been born with and...
But that's karma.
Right.
Yeah.
But this karma, free will, separation is very...
You can't really separate them. You can't tease them apart, really.
Yeah.
You can appreciate them, and you just take things as free will until it's a non-issue. And knowing that both are there, you take responsibility for your actions until it's not an issue. You done?
It was a nice little class.
Nice little class.
Yeah.